Too many of us view life only through the lens of immediate self-interest and crass materialism, in which the world is necessarily a zero-sum game. The strong too often dominate the weak.
A little bit of President Obama speaking at Notre Dame Sunday at their commencement. He went straight to the heart of the matter, and President Obama called for some cooperation, not only an easing of tensions between those who are in favor of abortion and those who oppose it, but he says we can actually work together if we're fair with one another. We can work to reduce the number of abortions and to give alternatives, and it sounds like the president's calling for a genuine, sincere attempt to make abortion more rare. Is that even possible? And when it comes to these kind of incremental or prudential arguments, whether or not the president's making it or not, sometimes pro-lifers blanch. They say, look, anything short of overturning Roe v. Wade amounts to compromise. We're going to talk about prudence in public policy for the next half hour of Issues Etc. It's Monday afternoon, May the 18th. Clark Forsyth joins us. You can as well, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE, or email your questions or comments to us, talkback@issuesetc.org. Clark Forsyth is Senior Counsel for Americans United for Life, based in Chicago. He's author of the new book, Politics for the Greatest Good, The Case for Prudence in the Public Square. Clark, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd. Good to be with you.
Your reaction to President Obama's statements yesterday at Notre Dame, where he seemed to call for, you know, working together to reduce the number of abortions?
Well, the president said a lot of good things rhetorically. The question is, what are his common ground policies, practical policies, that would effectively reduce abortion? And I'd like to see what those are. There are some practical public policies that, in fact, the states have tried to implement over the last 20, 25 years. Parental notice and consent laws, limits on public funding for abortion. Unfortunately, those are exactly the policies that the president's support for the Federal Freedom of Choice Act, or FOCA, would eliminate. So it would be good to actually engage the president on practical public policies that would reduce abortions, but I have yet to see any from this administration.
How do you respond to those on the pro-life side who are of the mind that anything short of an overturn of Roe v. Wade amounts to some kind of compromise?
Well, I do think that the overturning of Roe v. Wade is a very important goal and is still and must be to continue to be the goal because the Supreme Court, in contrast to most other public issues or many other bioethical issues, has taken the abortion issue away from the American people and has decided it for themselves. But other issues like cloning, reproductive technology, stem cell research, those issues are still decided by the people we vote for, either at the state in the state capitals or perhaps to a lesser extent in Congress. So Roe is uniquely an unjust decision and should be overturned. But the question is always how. And one of the things that prudence teaches us, instructs us, challenges us with is that we have to confront the obstacles to our goals and identify some effective solutions to achieve those goals. And we have not yet identified the solution to Roe versus Wade in overturning it.
Okay, you give some examples in your book of prudence in action on other big moral issues of other days. William Wilberforce and the issue of slavery is one that you use. As briefly as you can, show us how this concept of political prudence played out in his long career and actually his endurance on this issue in spite of many setbacks.
Yes, he persevered for 45 years, and if you've seen the movie Amazing Grace, it shows the first 20 years. I think to summarize, first of all, he persevered, and he persevered with effective action, and that consisted both of an ultimate goal of ending slavery in the British Empire, which took 40 to 45 years, and secondly, he combined that ultimate goal, that ultimate vision, with short-term, practical, incremental steps to get him closer, get Parliament, get the British nation closer to the goal. So, for example, he started by just focusing on abolishing the slave trade. And the movie Amazing Grace shows the first 20 years in which he focused on the slave trade.
Why is the ultimate goal, you use that phrase there, why is that so important for understanding prudence as opposed to simply compromising on the issue and saying, okay, this is all the farther we're going to get. We're not going to be able to get any farther. We're just going to have to live with it.
I think that those are very important distinctions. I'm glad you brought that up. A compromise involves a mutual concession. You and I, to reach a compromise, would have to both concede something, make a concession to reach an agreement. But if in the public policy process you are fighting tooth and nail just to put some kind of limits upon a social evil, whether it's the slave trade or slavery or abortion, if you're fighting tooth and nail just to put some limits around that social evil, you are making no concessions. There is no compromise. So there's an important distinction between prudence and compromise. And prudence, as practical wisdom, helps us decide in any particular circumstances whether we're compromising or not. Prudence is also different from pragmatism. Pragmatism is mostly just, you know what works. Prudence has moral purpose behind it. It has a moral goal. It has a goal of achieving moral goods or good goals in society. And so it's much more than just what works. It's what's your vision? What are you focused upon as a moral purpose in society?
You write all throughout your book about legislative fences. And first of all, by way of example, what are we talking about here?
Well, a legislative fence in the context of the slave trade would be when Wilberforce couldn't completely abolish the slave trade or prohibit the slave trade, they would put certain fences around the slave trade. They would try to limit it geographically. They would try to limit the number of slaves that could be carried on any ship. They attempted to kind of hedge it in and limit it to the greatest extent they could when the forces in Parliament, the opposing forces, wouldn't let them completely prohibit it. And over a period of time, which is shown in the movie Amazing Grace, they were able to shrink it and cut it down, and that meant less lives lost, less people enslaved, less money going into the slave trading industry, and that all produced progress toward the ultimate goal. But it's combining both the ultimate goal with the limits and legal and legislative fences.
So an example from today and the abortion issue, an example of a legislative fence.
Well, limits on public funding. Back in 1980, the Supreme Court said that neither the federal government, Congress, or the state governments had to publicly fund abortion with taxpayer funding. That was a very significant fence because the federal government only provides public funding for abortion in very limited areas. Many states don't fund it at all or only to save the life of the mother. So that was very important. Parental notice and consent laws, informed consent laws requiring that women get full information about the nature, risks, and alternatives. You might think of clinic regulations and others. And when you can't completely prohibit abortion, these are important to limit the industry, to limit the practice, to limit the number of women injured, to limit the number of lives lost, and so forth.
Given the court that we have today, I'm talking here about the Supreme Court, why is this path of prudence really the best path, especially given the fact that direct attempts at Roe v. Wade will open an opportunity for this court to speak one way or the other? You got about a minute and a half before our break.
Well, because prudence, the first thing is that prudence not only points us to the goal, but teaches us or instructs us to look at the obstacles to the goal. And our goal is overturning Roe versus Wade and returning the issue to the American people to decide, and we still have a pro-abortion majority on the court. We've still got, out of 9 justices, we've got 5 who strongly support Roe versus Wade. And until we get, I think, at least 6 justices who will overturn Roe versus Wade in the court, this court will only uphold certain legislative or legal fences. And there have been attempts to take a direct assault to Roe versus Wade to the court, I mean, at least 10 or 12 times. And those have been rejected. Until the court changes, until we have the right president and the right Senate to confirm the right justices, we have to put into the courts legislative fences and seek to get those upheld by the courts.
We're talking with Clark Forsythe. He's senior counsel of Americans United for Life, based in Chicago. His new book is called Politics for the Greatest Good, The Case for Prudence in the Public Square. I invite your questions or comments. This break is a great time to give us a call live this Monday afternoon, the 18th of May, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MY-I-E, or you can email your questions or comments to us right here in the studio in real time. Talkback at issuesetc.org. Talkback at issuesetc.org. By the way, we'll post information on Clark Forsythe's book, Politics for the Greatest Good, at our website tonight, issuesetc.org. Click the on demand page, issuesetc.org. The old saying is politics is the art of the possible. And to determine the possible and the path toward it, prudence would lay out our steps before us. We'll talk more about that when we come back from this break with Clark Forsythe. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about prudence and public policy, especially as it pertains to the life issue here in America. Our guest, Clark Forsythe. So do you favor or not an incremental approach? I want to hear from you. 1-877-623-6943. Is anything less than perfect legislation when it comes to the life issue somehow counterproductive? 1-877-623-6943. Or talk back at issuesetc.org. I'm curious as to your reaction, Clark. The latest poll from Gallup shows that a very slim majority, 51% of Americans, when it comes to abortion, consider themselves pro-life. What is your make on that answer?
Well, I think it was very important that the Gallup survey was self-identified or asked the recipients to self-identify themselves as pro-life or pro-choice. So they weren't categorized by Gallup. They asked people to how they would identify themselves. And I thought that was very significant in showing that for the first time a bare majority, 51% self-identified as pro-life. But the change since, and this is an annual poll, an annual question that's asked, and it's been asked since, I think it's been 96. And the change since 96 has been very significant, and I think it shows, perhaps more than anything else, that despite the campaign of the president over the past year and how much emphasis was put on the abortion issue over the past year, however popular President Obama may be, it doesn't seem to be translating into stronger support for abortion.
You argue in your book that it is actually the prudential approach that in many ways does a good job of educating and keeping the life issue and the abortion issue in front of the public.
That public education is essential. It's always essential. It was essential with Wilberforce and his allies. In fact, one of the interesting things that I point out in the book about Wilberforce and his allies is that they were one of the first, if not the first, kind of grassroots education campaign. They did a lot of marketing, and they did a lot of grassroots public education, and that Great Britain had really not seen before on a parliamentary campaign. And that's public education about these moral issues, these social issues, are important. They are an important part. They are not sufficient in and of themselves. You have to have a political strategy and a cultural strategy and a legislative strategy. But public education is always important. It always has to continue.
So do you think we're making up ground with the American people on the abortion issue, but losing ground with our elected officials?
We may be losing ground with our public officials in the sense that with this current president and the support by the media for this current president, some political officials may be shy about standing up for life. But I think that will pass. I think that we are making progress with the public. But I think that the real challenge for the Cause for Life in America is to raise public awareness of the negative impact on women from abortion, raise public awareness of the medical risks to women from abortion. The public sees abortion as kind of two sides of the coin. On one side, what's the impact on the child? On the other hand, what's the impact on the woman? And we have not spent enough time and resources and effort in raising public awareness of the impact on women, and we have to do more of that.
Why hasn't Roe been overturned? Why has it persisted? As bad a decision as it was, and even those who are in favor of abortion acknowledge that it was a poor decision legally, why has it persisted for over 35 years?
Well, three reasons, I guess. We have not kept a president in office long enough or a succession of presidents to name enough justices to overturn Roe. We have not sustained a Senate, a pro-life Senate, or an anti-Roe or anti-abortion Senate that will confirm the right justices, and we have not sufficiently raised public support as to ensure that we have the right president and Senate. I think those three are kind of interconnected. One of the constitutional problems is that Supreme Court justices have lifetime tenure. And so it takes a considerable amount of consistent effort and consistent political success to change the court by changing the justices.
You write extensively near the end of your book about, in lieu of overturning Roe v. Wade, hollowing it out. What do you mean?
I mean that through through legislation in the states and or possibly in Congress, but perhaps mostly in the states, and through test cases in the courts, we can induce the court to uphold legislation that cuts back on the abortion license more and more. And we, in fact, in contrast to this administration, the Obama administration, we have a court with five justices now, Kennedy, Roberts, Alito, Scalia, and Thomas, who will, I think, uphold virtually any regulation of abortion that makes medical sense. And until the time when we have six justices to overturn Roe, well, we can take advantage of the current majority on the court to uphold stronger and stronger regulations. To the point that the basic doctrines of Roe, the basic abortion license of Roe, can be limited more and more.
Now, obviously, those who are in favor of Roe are fully aware of the strategy here, which is, you know, obviously why they oppose even the simplest regulations, something like informed consent or medical regulation on abortion clinics and things like that. They view it all as a direct attack on Roe v. Wade. How do we, in terms of public perception, counteract their notion that we are directly attacking Roe v. Wade?
Well, I think it's by pushing some of these common sense regulations, like clinic regulations, like parental notice and consent, like limiting public funding, like ultrasound, providing ultrasound to women contemplating abortion. All of these make sense to the public. The public is kind of from across the spectrum is made up of perhaps 15% on one side that's vociferously pro-abortion, 15 to 20% that would prohibit abortion for any reason, and maybe 60% in the middle. who are not necessarily consistently pro-life or pro-abortion. We can appeal to them, and we should appeal to them to support life from conception to natural death, but they will also support the middle America, as I call it, will also support these common sense regulations, and they will support them, and the public opinion polls show that because most Americans would like to see abortion rare.
Finally, then, with only about 30 seconds, can Roe someday realistically be overturned and the decision returned to the states?
I think yes, very much. We have made progress against overwhelming obstacles, and I think especially if we can raise public awareness that the court imposes this abortion license, and if we can raise public awareness of the negative impact on women, the medical risk to women, we can make progress in the future.
Clark Forsyth is Senior Counsel of Americans United for Life, based in Chicago. He's author of the new book, Politics for the Greatest Good, The Case for Prudence in the Public Square. Thank you very much for being our guest.
Thanks, Todd.
Starting June 1st, we're going to re-debut, just as the show re-debuted almost a year ago, we're going to re-debut the Issues Etc. Journal. Very popular among our listeners and its readers. The new Issues Etc. Journal, debuting on June 1st, will be available via email, which means the easiest way, the only way to get it, is to subscribe by sending us an email at journal@issuesetc.org. The address again, journal@issuesetc.org. In this first new edition of the Issues Etc. Journal, there's an article I've written called Sheep Don't Keep Track. If you're worried about your moral progress, you can stop. You can find out more in the new Issues Etc. Journal. Also an article from Pastor George Borghardt on his journey theologically from Rome to the Reformation. It's the new Issues Etc. Journal. It's going to be out June the 1st, and you can get it. Email us, journal@issuesetc.org, journal@issuesetc.org. In the second hour of the program, Robert Spencer is going to join us from Jihad Watch. We're going to be talking with him about Islam as a religion of peace. The myth persists that Islam is a peaceful religion. We'll see whether or not the track record of Islam in any way supports the contention that Islam is a religion of peace. Then, in the second half hour of that second hour, Scott Klusendorf will be our guest. We're going to have his reaction and your reaction to some statements made yesterday by President Barack Obama when he spoke at the commencement of Notre Dame University. He went straight to the heart of the matter. He did not sidestep the issue. He talked about abortion. He talked about stem cell research. He talked about the differences between those who were in favor of abortion and those who were against it. He even, at the very beginning of his speech, I heard a few protests from the audience, and it seems as though he was calling for both sides on this issue, both the pro-life and the pro-choice side, to tone down their rhetoric and work together. We'll see what Scott Klusendorf thinks about that in about a half hour. I'm Todd Wilkin. Hour two of Issues Etc. is next.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.